Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
The Brotherhood of Shitty Movies. I hung my head in shame. I cannot remember anything except that I was losing the game. I fucking love me some eggnog. I want a mess I made. And now I am afraid. Cause
everything in life keeps coming back. It will hit me like a heart attack. Clip his wings.
Clip his wings.
I am now on the mission to find a Quasimodo, though.
Hello, welcome back to the Brotherhood Batman. I'm Ben, your sunshine into Gotham, and I happen to be the youngest of the three brothers.
I happen to be the middle brother, Jake, and I am the one that came up with the crazy list of comics that we read through each week.
And I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest out of us. Thanks for tuning back in to the Brotherhood of Batman podcast. We're three brothers who read Batman books in a continuity or just talk about Batman, DC, and all the fun things related to that. This week, we read Harleen from the DC Black Label to follow up our Mad Love episode from last week.
So much Harley Quinn.
There's a lot of Harley Quinn. We did not have necessarily a beverage today. We're in the middle of a Saturday. I think everybody's got a lot of things going on, so we can drink whatever you feel would be appropriate for watching someone spiral into their own madness.
I'll be drinking tequila in 2.5 hours.
That sounds like that would spiral yourself into some madness.
Yeah, that's a good way to start.
So what's been
or
going
coffee.
On?
A lot
your...
of coffee. Yeah. You should drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you would need that. You know, she drank a bunch of that. What's going on in your geeky little lives? Stop talking
about comic books, or what do you think you're doing, nerd? Stop
spending. Get the nerd! 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 Or I swear to God, you're gonna spend your 20 years alone.
Geek.
I'm the Batman of geeks, bitch.
Well, I haven't gotten my tattoo yet. I've just been fanboying all over yours. That's
I appreciate
that's
that
for sure.
It's at that itchy, peely stage where it's like you don't want to touch it.
Don't touch it.
No, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have talked many times about my love and obsession with the board game Zombicide. Mm. We recently got a package in the mail from some pre-ordered accessories for Zombicide.
Nice.
The Batman Dark Knight Metal sets are out, and I now own them. And
do you need a separate room just for the Zombicide?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a 5-foot-tall rolling toolbox that it is in. It's ridiculous.
That's
a 5-foot-tall rolling toolbox.
Yep,
that's wild on its own, much less what you fill it with.
Yep.
Wasn't that your nickname in high school?
Toolbox. 5-foot-tall.
Wow.
It's pretty great. I will admit, like, you gotta be, they do a lot of Dark Knight Metal stuff, and so you gotta be a big fan of that. But I mean, regardless, the main box is Batman, and then the Batman Who Laughs with his Robin little slaves, and that alone, like, I get to run around the world of Zombicide as Batman and kill zombies. I'm really excited. So
no, that sounds fun. You've talked about that game a lot, and I need to get out and play. So I need.
Yeah, you guys need to come over and play it. I think we'll love it. I now have Mr. T, so you can be Mr. T if you'd like.
Oh, nice.
How long is a game of Zombicide?
How long?
So
you want?
If you know how to play, like, the setup takes a little while. If you have a mission that everybody kind of knows how to play, you're probably looking at an hour to an hour and a half.
That's not bad at all.
But you can play longer missions that, I mean, we've played ones that go like 2 to 3 hours. And the more people you have at the table, the more discussion about turn sequencing and everything. Like, if Sarah and I play a mission, our communication chain gets shortened and we can go pretty rapidly. But if you have like six, you can play up to six people, so you got six people, that's six different viewpoints on who should be doing what each turn. And because it is cooperative, you either win or lose together. There's a lot of sequencing discussion and that kind of stuff, so it can drag out if you let it. But I mean, the game isn't designed to be a all day long game, but I have a dream of so we used to sell it where I work, and when we were getting out of selling it, I bought up a bunch of the extra accessories for
it. Oh, nice.
And that's kind of what got me down this path. And so I have enough map tiles. So we have an extendable table that'll seat 12 people when you extend it. I have enough map tiles to make a huge map that stretches the entire table. And so I've...
Have you played with that yet?
No, I want to. It would be a whole day and probably still not be done.
How big are these map tiles? Are they like 9 by 9?
11 by 11.
11 by 11. Are they like interlockable or something?
They're thick cardboard, so they'll sit and you just push them together. There are... People on Etsy and stuff have made like clips connector clips and stuff. Okay. So you could clip them together, but it's not necessary. But the nice thing about them is they are designed to be interchangeable and modular. So you are given missions that will use the same tiles in different formats, and then they're double-sided. So you have a lot of variety in the world. But yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I have the Ninja Turtles, I have the Ghostbusters. So like I have these pop culture characters that I want to throw in there and play these wild games, but yeah.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
And your family's down to play.
Yes. Noah gets overwhelmed by the setup and the teardown and the time of it, but
fair.
And you know, when you have a toddler, like you get the toddler to bed by 8:30, and then it's like I am not up for a 2 hour long game.
Well, during the week, yeah, that'd be rough to do a 2 hour plus game on a Wednesday or Tuesday night.
Right. Like, we usually have to plan ahead and be like, okay, we're gonna play, and we're gonna get set up right after dinner while somebody's getting the little guy to bed, and then start immediately kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh,
because it is too enticing that there are 100 zombie miniatures sitting out.
You'd be chucking them all over the place.
I would do that too.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, absolutely.
Highly recommend it, but nice.
Awesome. I brought a book. I pre-ordered this. It is the illustrated Weird Al book comic. It is
I think I remember you telling me
something about
it was a long time ago.
It is 22 I think it's 22 songs that he has our artist have illustrated.
What?
22 of his songs, and it's all different art styles and takes on his music. And it's just kind of some of them are really
stealing that.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. So
did you just get it? It
came like last week, so it's but it's definitely cool. I've read a few of them. There's like Night Santa Went Crazy. There's some of the classics in there.
Emo Phillips writes the
he wrote the intro and the foreword, and it's really ridiculous, and it's pretty great. This is
the Night Santa Went Crazy.
Emo
That's so good.
He's a comedian on both of Weird Al's tours. Where it's like his own mutant, like his original stuff. Emo Phillips was the opening comedian act, who's just very deadpan. If you saw the UHF movie, he's the shop teacher who cuts his hand off or fingers off. Really, yeah, his very dry delivery style. And yeah, just really funny.
This is amazing. It's by
great.
Z2 Comics.
Jake's like another thing to buy.
I know. Well, it's retailed and everything. It's got SRP
it's on
and a barcode, so you
CLZ.
It's not just a Kickstarter exclusive or anything. You can go out and buy it.
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know.
The different art styles are really cool.
Try to not Amazon while we're recording.
That's all right.
What's been going on with you, Benjamin?
A lot of life things, nothing super geeky. So I'll just say that I'm very excited that Blue Superman is back. I got the first issue of Superman's child, John Kent, being blueified. And I loved the issue and I loved the anime or the art style, but it was like super downplayed. He's like, oh, yep, I just got some new powers. I'll have to deal with that later. So there's a whole like mini series coming out that's going to like focus.
I don't have time for these new powers.
Yeah, basically. It's a storyline called Lazarus Planet that's like arching through all of DC Comics right now. And a bunch of characters are getting new powers and things. I sent you guys a picture and you were like, is that Mercy? So Mercy that we've talked about on this podcast, Lex's hench person. Yeah. She develops powers in the storyline. So it's just a bunch of... So the one I picked up deals with like the super people. So it's got John Cat and Mercy and Power Girl.
Lazarus Planet. Is Ra's al Ghul show up? That definitely sounds like somewhere Ra's would hang out.
I think it kind of started with that because I think it came off of like Batman versus Robin, which is like Batman and Damian duking it out. I don't know. Hmm. I pick and choose what I buy because I'm already buying too much. So right. I can't... No, I these that. Crossovers. I'm like, oh, good. One that just deals with the super people grabbing it. So I'm excited to see where they go with the Blooper Man. Well, it'll be nice because like when John Kent became Superman, his dad was off on another planet. Now that they're both here, it'll help distinguish them. It'll make them look visually different other than just one looking younger. And so
right.
I love Blue Superman. But it'll be, I think it'll make sense now to have, especially because like some of the other super family members are being brought back into storytelling. So instead of they all looking the same, having one be blue is nice. So
sure.
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we read Harleen, which is the DC Black Label. And I think Jake and I both have the hardcover book. And this starts with, it kind of follows the origin of Harleen. Getting her doctorate and going and exploring her passion and her research into finding out what causes villains to become villains and lose their empathy. And so it's then her finding out and getting a job at Arkham and meeting one Joker and trying to use him as her case study. And
it works out real well.
It does work out real well for Joker.
First thing I want to talk about is this was all done by one person.
Yep.
The art is amazing, and the story is actually, like, a good story.
I don't think I realized it was just one person did all
this. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to mess up his name.
Is it a man?
Yes.
Okay. I couldn't tell from the name.
I think it's Stefan Selick or
Sajic?
Sajic,
maybe.
S-T-J-E-P-A-N. And then S-E-J-I-C.
But there's weird marks over the S and the C in his last names.
Yeah, so he did a lot on Witchblade in the later years. And then maybe one of his more well-known works is Sunstone, which is an adult comic about a lesbian BSDM couple.
That checks out with us.
Yeah. BDSM. Sorry. I reversed those letters. But amazing art. Just stellar style. Very like borderline realistic looking, yet sharp and artistic, and coloring's great. But like you said, he wrote it as well. So it is a singular creative vision.
Which is wild.
Pretty crazy. And it's hefty. It's three issues, but they are all like 30 pages long. Like this is a 100-page long book or something.
Yeah, it felt long because, I mean, it didn't feel like, oh, I can't wait for this to be done long, where some of the things we've read, it's like, oh my God, is this ever over? But I kind of like just found myself just staring into the art style. There's some pages where the depth of like what when Harley is on the street or Harleen is on the street watching Batman battle Joker and she's got
smoke
in the smoke and then Joker gets flung against a wall right by her and this grappling hook then yanks him back. It's like in and out of the shadows. I thought it was just like it really immersed you in the story. I thought
there's some dream sequences with Batman being a monster and then Joker's a monster and she's scared of everyone. And I thought that was a cool through line, but also an interesting way to play with the art style.
And then just like double page spreads of her psychoanalysis interviews with the different people where it's all just talking heads, but the amount of expression that are in the faces and like you feel her changing and whether it's boredom or interest or obsession or love. You know, you can read her expressions in every panel, I think, very clearly.
We need to talk about her friend at the beginning of the book.
Oh, what's her friend's name?
Dr. Chandra.
Who's a psychotherapist?
Iconic.
That was pretty awesome. I did not know that she was in here when we suggest when I picked this up originally, I had bought this a long time ago for a podcast, hadn't read, and
I sat up.
I did as well. I was like, oh, let's make some notes here.
Yeah, I looked up and tried to, I was like, she's never given a last name, but it's, it's a woman of color who has been in med school with Harlene.
Harlene's only friend.
Only friend. She's a little bit kooky into like holistic medicine, mm-hmm. but she's also a pharmaceutical therapist.
Yeah.
It was great. There were little things throughout this. Like when you all handed me the book, I was excited. And I flipped through a little. And I was like, ooh, it's so pretty. But I didn't expect all these other characters. Like, we get origins to other characters in here. And a whole lot of Gotham is in these three issues, which I thought was neat.
Yeah. We get one Mr. Harvey Dent's bad guy origin. How did you feel about that, Jake?
Fucking loved it. I mean, I'm so glad that they... So this plays in Gotham. It plays with the universe that we know. There are a few tweaks, but there are an mm-hmm. awful lot of similarities to what we read last week.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the origin for what we know is kept intact. And then just...
Meaning the Mad Love story inspired off the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what we've learned in No Man's Land of being her background in comic book canon...
Mm-hmm.
It's not thrown to the side and redone. It's just, it's delved deeper here. And they did the same thing with Two-Face. Like, well, actually, they didn't go too deep into Two-Face, mm-hmm. but we got to see Two-Face.
Too deep.
We got to see him scarred by Maroni, by acid in the face. And, you know, whether it happens while Maroni's on the stand or it happens somewhere, I'm just glad that that part of it is held
together.
It's
the same, same general idea.
Yeah, and to watch him slip into his madness, it's not in the animated series when he takes the bandages off and wakes up for the mm-hmm. first time, he snapped into Big Bad Harv.
No, yeah, but here, he did not. It was slow. It was kind of like him visualizing himself, and he's like, where's that voice coming from a couple times? I really liked how the Harlene prefaced it as she's like telling the story. Like, in 5 months, we'll both be murderers. As she's like having like a conversation about Dent trying to get her to stop her research. He doesn't like looking into the lack of empathy because he thinks it's going to send more villains out on the street and that it's going to make his job as DA so much harder and the police's job harder if that she's now actually helping these criminals and they can't just lock them up.
Yeah, those believable characters with motives that make sense for what we know of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to tie that together where she is trying to help and heal, he is trying to keep them out and away and locked up, and we have so little Batman. We have all of this happening, all of the discussion of what's the right way to treat the victims, what's mm-hmm. the right way to treat the attackers, are they sick, are they evil, and very little Batman to give his feelings on the whole matter.
I liked the little Batman that we had.
I think we all agree our favorite Batman stories, Batman's not in them.
It reminded me of, didn't we read for this, like it was one of my Elseworlds, like the Killer Smile Joker story where Batman was sort of in it as well. He makes appearances in here, and they're important, and it's prominent, but it's not like overwhelming. It's not like he's having to take over. Bruce funds Harley's research. Bruce is into her trying to solve and help people because he wants to save Gotham, and we get more Bruce, I think, than we do Batman in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So, that's Aaron, you said Bruce is into, so we got to talk about what Harley is into. This was a sexy Joker. I can just say that. This was a sexy, like, it was really cool to see why she could fall for him. And she battles herself through this of like, he's lied to everyone else. I've watched all these tapes of all the other psychiatrists talking to him. But for me, it's different. For me, it feels different. And as a reader, I'm like, girl, like, you in danger. But I'm also like, I mean, he's kind of wooing me over here. Like, I see the appeal, and I see why she would fall into this trap. And her whole thesis was, like, if you're surrounded in this world.
If you're exposed to it.
If yeah. you're exposed to it, you're going to eventually snap. And then we see her being in the world of Arkham.
Oh, you in trouble?
Yeah. And she proves her own thesis by becoming that. Yeah.
Yep. And I love that. The antagonist of the story, this is not an action-driven comic book at all. The antagonist of the story are her own feelings and emotions, mm-hmm. right? Like, she is battling herself, and it's conflict with self the entire time is, wait a minute, why do I feel this way and I know that I shouldn't? And it just, you watch those emotions tip her over that edge. And because the story is allowed as much room as it needed to breathe, like, it is very wordy, it is very heavy, and it is kind of a slow read, but that slowness drags you over that precipice of her falling into madness.
I thought it was built up. He had enough time to tell the story of her descent. It seemed plausible, like, just thinking of the psychology background, like, she's spending this much time, she's not sleeping. He's in her dreams. He knows how to get in her head. When he buys and pays off the guard to get her file yeah. and then uses that and she falls for it, you can just see it in him. I was like, oh, man, he is so fucking sneaky and dirty in here. I just love it. It's like,
yeah,
this is like the Joker I love is this sneaky, manipulating con man who's just like, it's going to be a joke for me because I can pull you along. And, you know, does he like her? Does he love her? I don't know.
Well,
Bruce and Alfred talk about that, right? And one of them's yeah. like, well, it looks like they're into each other. Like, I like that mm-hmm. there is the bit of uncertainty.
And to watch him be the manipulator and to literally, like, there's a page where the table is turned and he's her doctor uh-huh. and mm-hmm. she's the one in chains and that being her own psyche and her own
Well,
retelling.
There's even, like, a version of that happening in Mad Love.
Yes.
Like, it was so cool to read both of them together and be like, oh, this cartoon one came way before this mm-hmm. one did. And there's inspiration there.
I love that, Aaron, you were talking about how the Joker that you love, like how intelligent he is. And she is extremely intelligent in this story. And she is, although she does become the victim of Joker's manipulation, she isn't a bubbly, over-the-top, mm-hmm. Wanderlust kind of lost soul. Mm-hmm. She's an intelligent, put together woman who makes some mixed missteps in
well,
decision making.
She talks about her choices, yeah. and we see a little bit of her life throughout this in beautiful panels. But a similarity in Mad Love, like, she also ends up sleeping with a professor here. But in this one, it's like, well, you didn't need to. Your grades were great. But she gets the, like, negative from other peers. Like, there's other female peers who were slut shaming her and accusing her of this, that, and the other. And, well, you only got this because you slept with him. And she's like, well, my grades were good, but I did sleep with him. Yeah. So there's that conflict, which was cool and very, when was this made? 2019,
2019. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so it feels more now than the 1994 one. And I appreciate both aspects.
Yeah. Did you guys, so we have the hardback. I don't like hardback dust jackets when I read the book.
Oh, so you took it off?
I took it off.
I did not, no.
Okay, take the dust jacket off.
All right.
Of the hardback cover.
I'm stripping the book now.
Just on the cover.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, shit.
It is her bloodied, biting her glasses. So the cover is her holding a Harlequin mask above her face.
With one tear down her exposed side.
And yeah. she looks happy, and then she looks mortified on the next page. This is stunting. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an accident, a happy accident, and I don't know. On the covers of the comics, I would like to find the single issues and see if that image is anywhere other than on the hardback, but it is worth taking a look at.
Yeah.
So this is three really big issues, and so the two, issue one and issue two, end on big moments for these characters, which obviously the issues are releasing in the comic book store over, you know, a month or two, whatever the time between the they are. But the final panel is a full page spread of issue one, and she's put off for months, and she's talked to everybody else in Arkham after she's been given the assignment. She's put off going to Joker because they had a run-in in the street, and she's scared of him. She's horrified of him. And she goes, and she's like, I'm finally going to do it. And she's very timid about talking to him. And he's like, well, no, you can just call me Jay.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
The final page is, okay, Mr. Jay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I bought this book in the hardback and was reading it by myself just for fun reading outside of the show when it came out. And when I read that panel and I read that page, I stopped reading. I'm like, I have to wait and finish this book with my brothers because this is insane.
Oh, okay. So when? How long ago did you start reading it?
Probably whenever 2019.
When it came out.
Whenever the book finally, when I didn't buy the single issues, but whenever I got the trade, which is like the week or two it came out, and I read it, you know, a week or two later, and I stopped. I was like, oh, I have to wait.
I remember you telling us that. Yeah.
Nice. That's, yeah.
That page was so beautiful because it's them standing on opposite sides of the glass, and you see her, and then there's like a shadow of him kind of like, she's just standing there, but then the shadows, it looks like he's like overseeing her. Like he's like, his body posture is like taking her over, and she looks different in the shadow than she does standing there, which I'm just like, oh. And then book two ends with them hugging the first time she unlocks him from his chains.
Yeah.
And she blocks the camera. As soon as she starts blocking the camera, I was like, oh girl, you did. You done. It's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and she tells him to call her Harley.
So they get their names in the ending of the two books. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so good.
and they mention she got the nickname Harley back in college from her first job.
Because everybody wrote her.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, because of that, which I liked that joke came from the Mad Love again. But in Mad Love, she's using it as a power thing. And then in this one, she eventually like leans into the nickname. So it's interesting.
One of my favorite little Easter eggs. There were so many good ones. You were talking about the shadows at the end of issue one. There's a scene where when she's first going into Arkham, she's talking about walking into the light without seeing your own shadow. And her shadow is the Harley Quinn outfit behind her. But there's a moment early on when they run into each other in the street and Joker's getting ready to take down Batman and one of his goons is dying on the hood of the car that they just crashed. And so he shoots the goon and he turns to the other goon and what did he say? He said, Bob, you're my number one guy.
Oh, I know.
I was like, that's from 89. I got really excited. So.
Yeah, no, I caught that one too. And he shoots. What did he say? He said something funny too when he shoots the guy. Something
I didn't write that one down, sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, no, I just wrote the Bob, you're my number one guy, but he says something else funny where it's like, yeah, if you crash or something, like
put your seatbelt on.
We may be super villains, but we're not dumb super villains. Like wear a seatbelt.
Yeah, something about seatbelt safety.
Yeah, so he shoots him because he didn't wear a seatbelt and he doesn't want him questioned or whatever.
Yeah, it's hard to not fanboy over this story and talk in a, you know, a good critical review of it because I love affair of these books. Like I would say that this book does not get the recognition that it deserves. Like I feel like it is an award-winning story. I think it is as good of storytelling for like backtracking as Mad Love or The Killing Joke or anything major. I mean, what this does for Harley Quinn is pretty important.
Do you think that's because it's under Black Label, which is not quite continuity?
Sure, yeah.
They have more room to play.
Yeah.
I think. Not that, I mean, DC continuity is so messed up and so much retconning anyways, but
right.
I could see that. We get some Poison Ivy in here, which I always get excited about. And Harley shows some niceties to her, which ends up paying off down the line and Ivy saves her from what, Killer Croc?
Croc, yeah.
She yeets him out the building.
Well, the cop's like, I think that was Killer Croc.
as he stares in the distance.
He eats like half the Arkham workers, and then Poison Ivy knocks him out with some branches, which I was obsessed with. And then
didn't she say you've eaten enough?
She's eating, yeah, you've eaten enough, you fat ass. And then Ivy's like, Harley's like, you saved me. And she's like, you're only safe if you leave Arkham. And Harley chooses not to leave Arkham.
Because Two-Face's plan, once he becomes Two-Face, is to free everybody from Arkham, release them. He flips the coin. It's either going to be Blackgate Prison or, and you don't hear Arkham, but you know it's Arkham, as he walks up to it as the coin lands on Arkham being what's freed. And freeing everybody there so that the craziness can take over and that people can see the deficits in the city and the deficits behind what's going on.
Yeah, that things are not what they appear and that there are two sides of everything, right?
Even if one of the sides was originally the same side and you had to scratch it really hard.
And so Harley has to make it's not really much of a choice at this point. I mean, she has fallen desperately in love with Joker. I mean, she is, turning the cameras off more often than she should be. And
they had some sexy times.
They did.
She got some sleep
pretty much after that. I think she finally was able to sleep.
Because she wasn't scared of him anymore. It was messed up. but one of his stories is that he falls in a vat of acid and it like killed a bunch of the nerve endings in his skin, and so he's like, I have to feel something really intensely to feel it at all. I'm like, oh, this is gonna get kinky real quick. And she sees the scars on his back and then she's adding them with her fingernails. I'm just like, this is not what I normally read, but I'm not mad about it.
Well, and at one
Where's
point,
Tim Drake?
she watches Joker sleep before that and sees the scars and notices them. And one point during their interviewing, Joker goes, how often do you watch me sleep? And it's like, oh, that was so like chilling. And
well, and when we see her go visit him while he's sleeping, she's like, this is the fourth night that I've gone to watch him sleep. And I'm like, there were so many times I caught myself being like, no, Harley, no, stop. Like, you know, like she is retelling her own story. It's in her own words. And you know, she knows where it's all headed. And I'm like, no, stop.
And she tells us / hints throughout, which I really like, because you've mentioned that there's some scenes where there's a shadow of her as Harley, or even where we see her as future Harley. But I like that she's not Harley for most of it. I like that it happens at the end, because picking this up, I thought it was going to be much quicker. I thought it was going to be like, we get the origin and then we get a story of her as Harley. And I really like that the whole book focused on the origin.
Did you catch the one Easter egg where the cop is brought coffee? Did you catch that?
Where the cop is brought coffee?
The guard brought coffee.
She hands him coffee.
Let me see if I can find it. But there's a name written on the coffee cups. Did you catch that?
Oh, there is one that says Tim, right?
It's right here.
Oh, that was weird.
Yeah, that's very odd. Look at the coffee cups. One says Deanie.
Oh, nice, nice. And the other says Tim.
Yeah.
That's cute. I did not see that.
Very good.
That's kind of a fun little...
Nice job, little guy. I can't say your name.
Sven. Steven.
Sven. What else? There's a lot.
When she met with Ivy, her hormone levels were elevated, which I thought, that's kind of an interesting foreshadowing.
Yeah.
There's always those moments where I think this podcast has given, Ben, you've always been a Harley fan, and it's given me a greater appreciation to discuss and read some of her stories with you. And I think the HBO show has done a lot for her. That character to make up for Uma Thurman was great, but that movie was horrible.
Talking about Poison Ivy?
Yeah.
You said Poison Harley.
Oh, sorry. Ivy. The moment, like, so Dent has his new goons, the executioners, throw dirt into her cell, and like she touches it with her toe and like it starts to illuminate. I'm like, oh, people are going to die.
Oh, the panel, like the full page spread of her was really pretty page.
When Ivy powers up and like you realize that like she is probably the most powerful of all of Batman's villains. Like if she unleashes, people are in serious fucking trouble.
It shows a lot about the artist's skill set that he was able to draw Croc. He was able to draw Ivy. He was able to draw all these different characters and situations well. I feel like with this sort of more down-to-earth, not down-to-earth, this is more like real-world, realistic art, I didn't know what to expect from the supervillains. I didn't know if that was going to be as strong as just like her in her room drinking, which were all beautiful pictures, and her expressions and everything were really good. So being able to do that with the super aspect was impressive.
And I think being able to do all that and to have, like, we've talked about the sexuality in the story, and it is not hyper, but it is definitely present for the whole thing.
I think it's a lot more tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she has always kind of been a character of sexuality. She's drawn very flamboyantly, is that the right word?
I know what you mean.
Joker's plaything, and that's where she started, and that's what she's become. She is drawn to look like a woman. She's an attractive woman, but she has a natural shape. She's not over sexualized with weird bending of the 90s and all ass shots. It's, you know, when she's at home in a oversized t-shirt, there's a sense of sexuality there, but it actually is a comforting way. It's like, this is what a woman looks like.
It's more realistic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was, I think that's very well handled. Like I don't want you to think this is just like a not safe for work comic, because that stuff is in there, but I think it's actually handled.
I would
really
say probably
well.
Don't read comics at work unless that's your job.
I wish it was my job.
I mean, lunch breaks.
Oh, that's true. How did we not say the guy running Arkham is Dr. Hugo Strange?
Oh, Hugo, yes.
And so getting Hugo back, or Dr. Strange back into our, I was expecting some, like, not expecting him to go off and have like his secret lab room, but I was expecting him to go off and have a secret lab
room. He's definitely twisted here, and there's definitely an air of, you don't know, and he's kind of scary. I liked not knowing where the other villains were going throughout this. It all was like, we know where they go, but we don't know what's going to happen in this book.
Yeah,
because the placement of it with the creation of, I mean, when we see Harvey, he's undamaged, right? Mm-hmm. For the first time, I mean, like, oh, okay, so this is early. This is year one, year two kind of thing, which I'm okay with pushing Harley's origin back all the way to then. That doesn't bother me.
Well, because she had to have enough time with Joker and everything.
Yeah.
It takes a while for a stable person to go down a rabbit hole of doom.
About 100 pages.
Well, we don't know how stable she was to begin with. She's like, I'm overworked. I have one friend. She talks a lot about the empathy thing and about how these characters and these villains are antisocial. And we find out early that she's kind of antisocial. So it's like the groundwork is there. Yeah. And she made mistakes in her youth or whatever, but she admits like those are mistakes and I can be a better person and stuff. But it's like, does she actually grow from it, or does she circle back around to it? I think we need to talk about when she finally does become a murderer. She has befriended sort of this one guy, this guard, who's nice to her.
Watches out for her at Arkham.
Is the reason she's able to bone the Joker, because he stops coming into the sessions and she just shoots him in the head to save the Joker.
And it's a double page, like it is her break, right? That's her.
I feel like there's more than one throughout this book, but it is like the literally no coming back.
Yeah, no going back. Yeah. Yep. And she's well aware of it when she does it. Like, right? She's not. You can it builds the tension. She picks up the gun. She's behind him. She's telling him to leave, and da 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 da. And then it happens. And like, wow, no, Harley, don't.
Oh yeah, she kind of goes all in, and you think. Do you think Joker was planning that? Do you think Joker's like, I want to see how far I can take this? What do you think his ulterior motive with Harley was?
He probably wanted to just have fun, and if it went to her being crazy, cool. If not, he got some vagina and had a good time. So I definitely think that he was open, but he is just down for a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he finds her an entertaining distraction at times, or a fun fun catalyst for his jokes. I don't think he's capable of love. I think he has the same issue that she has with, you know, obsession, right? Like, he mm-hmm. is obsessed. But
with Batman.
Yes.
That's his love.
I think it is. And I don't think he could ever return any real affection, because I think it shows he's not capable of opening up to anybody about anything, right, and ever it being real. Because of the moment that you think and she thinks that it's happening, we find out that he's just manipulating her. He's just playing games, right, mm-hmm. for his own amusement. So, no, I don't think it's real love. But
no, it must be kind of a mad love or something.
Must be kind of a mad love.
Yeah.
Anything else?
There was a lot going on here. I think we've touched on most of the things.
It would be hard to, I mean, you could talk about this book for a while, I think.
I feel like we're going to stop recording. I'm going to remember things. But we have a lot more Harley to come. And
reviews?
But let me ask you something. What do you think of this? Say it's
all right. That was terrible. Right. Horrendous. I'm offended. I'm it's appalled. All right.
That was
awesome. It's all
right. Whoa, yes.
It's yes.
All right.
No!
I'll go first. I enjoyed this a lot, especially because it is not my wheelhouse. It's a character I love, but it's not my wheelhouse. It's not my genre or style. But I thought it was done super well. And as I said, I really liked that it was done by one person. Like, how freaking talented.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. Insane to be able to be that strong in both fields. And I'm really, really glad it was sort of my idea, but I'm really glad we read it with Mad Love. I think it was cool to look at her now, because now we've had three origins of her. We waited long enough. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I thought it, I like the darker style. I like the Black Label stuff. I thought the origin for her and the origin for Harvey and almost even the Joker's origin in here were just really well done, really well written. The art is beautiful. I think it's some of the stronger stuff that we've read. I probably will read it again sometime, just and spend, maybe not all the way through, and definitely I'm not taking notes the second time, but I'm sure there'll be things that I catch and pay attention to. I thought the psychology aspect I thought was really interesting and well done. Definitely, it's worth a read if you like any of the characters or if you like the darker side. But like Ben said, we've read like 2-3 origin stories now of Harley, and I think it's kind of, they have a lot of similarities, and there's some different takes on it, but I think it's it was good having some people that we haven't seen in a while show back up. It's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I think for a character who came about while Ben and I and Aaron were young and into comics and everything, and who has been around for 30 years and changed and developed like few characters are allowed to. I think it's really important to give her the time that character deserves and talk about the different places that she came from. And I think this book, if you are okay with the more adult themes, I think this is a book that you should absolutely add to your collection. I could not recommend it higher. If you are comfortable with reading the DC Black Label stuff, it's violent, it's sexy, but it's, I think it's handled better than, it's my favorite thing we've read in a long time, and I will reread it again, probably not in one sitting, because it's a lot, and I want to let it breathe, and I am not disappointed that I stopped and waited and went back to it, because it was as good and stuck all of the points that I would have hoped after that first issue that it would finish. So
great.
Wow. Did we all actually like the last couple things we've read on this podcast?
I'm sure that'll change. What's next, Jake?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll actually take over what's next, and I'm sure Aaron will not enjoy this, but I will. We are reading Young Justice, Sins of Youth, and we are doing it slightly differently. So Young Justice is Tim Drake's little superhero team, and this is a fun little romp. We're going to have a guest star in the form of my bestie and Jake's wife. She's going to join us for episode 1 and 2. Episode 1 is Young Justice 15 through 19, which are all collected in a trade, and Sins of Youth number 1. So tune in for a good, wholesome time.
So it's 15 through 19, and that's called Sins of Youth 1?
It's Young Justice 15 through 19, and then Sins of Youth number 1.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the Sins of Youth is collected in a trade paperback. The Young Justice issues are collected in multiples, so you'd have a probably better chance of finding the single issues.
It'll be a lot of fun. So,
great.
Yeah. Awesome. What did we learn, Aaron?
It's that time again.
To do another one of our cute little skits?
No, it's time to learn the day's lesson. And to find out what it is, we turn to the Wheel of
Batman.
Wheel of
Batman.
Turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
Well, kids, please wear your seatbelt.
Or get shot in the head.
Yes. And Joker's safe word is Batmobile.
Oh, that, yeah, yeah. For the Brotherhood Batman, I'm Ben, your sunshine, and DeGoth Ham, and the baby brother.
I'm Aaron. I'm the oldest of us. I'll clean us up. Thanks for tuning in.
And I'm Jake. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Hopes of bitter plants, this city's way.